From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
It's Danny, Dave, and Moore. Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
We got some numbers coming in. Herbie Chiofi of the NFL Network reporting that it's a two-year, $9 million deal for DJ Fluker. So he got his salary, a $1.5 million salary from last season, tripled. Good for him. 2 years, $9 million for DJ Fluker. He joins the team along with Mike Iupati, who was most recently in Arizona and is evaluated as a really good run blocker. And a guy who, man, he was a Pro Bowler to start his career coming out of Idaho, a first-round pick that the 49ers made, and Mike Solari coached there. He has been injured recently, and Seattle making up for the loss of J.R. Sweezy by retaining Fluker and then adding Iupati. Is that enough up front?
Yeah, I think so. By the way, the professor was right. I guess he wasn't cut. There was some question about that, but he does cost them a compensatory pick.
It will keep them from collecting one.
Yeah,
I want to be officially on record as not caring about compensatory picks anymore.
I don't know, man. I like the idea. I mean, you're right. It's like it's 2 years later.
Right. You get it. What, 14 months later?
Yeah. So I think they have, that makes it 10 now, maybe in 2020. But yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, woohoo! I can't wait for the 2021.
We're gonna have an extra fifth rounder. Yeah. Because that's what Iupati would cost them as a fifth or a sixth round pick.
Right. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, he's been a Pro Bowler and All Pro 1 year with San Francisco. And then, and he was actually a Pro Bowler with Arizona in 2015. So, four times to the Pro Bowl. Sweezy, has Sweezy gone to a Pro Bowl?
No, he's not. He was an alternate this past year.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's a little bit older than Sweezy, and he came in the league in 2010, and Sweezy was 12. He was part of that good draft. So, yeah, I mean, I thought what Sweezy did was good. I thought, you know, look, he looked like a good player that you would want to keep, but, you know, you get a guy who's going to end up being a couple million dollars cheaper, and he's a big, strong guy. And so, you know, it's too bad. But I think between the two, for me, and I don't know where you guys were on this, but to me, DJ Fluker was more important, and it was because of the spirit of how he plays. And you used the word inspire earlier. And it sounds corny, but it's inspiring to have a guy next to you like that. And I think also he more embodied the punishing running game than Sweezy, even though Sweezy was tough and kind of nasty too. And he's one of those guys that got in people's, kind of like Matisse Thybulle. He kind of gets in their pockets and just bothers them and takes them out of their game. But DJ Fluker is just an upfront, I'm not afraid of anybody, and I'm going to smash you in the mouth. And I thought he was more important. So it was nice that he's going to get signed here. And, yeah, I was bummed seeing Sweezy go, but I was more bummed about Coleman. Justin Coleman, to me, I just loved watching him play, and I thought he was really good for this defense. But, you know, again, they can develop defensive backs, and, you know, they'll have somebody that'll be able to play maybe not as well as Coleman, but hopefully in a couple years. So, yeah, so far, you know, like you said, it's kind of like sitting in the corner, like in the beginning of the Rocky movie where he takes body blow after body blow. But now they're starting to, you know, when you look at it and when this whole thing's over, you're going to go, okay, they didn't go after these ridiculously high-priced free agents. They got some good guys back. They got a kicker, you know, who we'll see. He was a Pro Bowler last year. That means he could totally fall apart this year. We know that, right?
Yes.
No matter what.
Happens all the time with these guys.
Yeah, so especially lately for whatever reason. So, yeah, but that's a position that you want to lock down, and they definitely needed to improve. And then they got KJ Wright back. And the more I say it and the more I look at it, the more I'm like, that was really a great move and a relief. I love that they got KJ back because KJ has not been hurt a lot, and he was hurt most of last season. But when he played, when he came in that Dallas game, man, he was good. That was as good of linebacker play as I've seen in one game in a long time. Well, probably going back to the San Francisco game when Bobby Wagner had all those stats.
Dave, you're the perfect person to talk to this because on the surface, people have looked at it and said, well, you just re-signed two weak side linebackers. Bobby Wagner's your middle, but Michael Kendricks and KJ Wright, and that's the position Michael Kendricks played because KJ Wright wasn't playing when he first came to the team. Is there room for all three of those guys?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the thing is, also, you're getting a little bit of insurance. What was the number on Kendricks? Was it 2.5?
$4 million.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good insurance policy. They've been kind of light at linebacker, I mean, depth-wise. So, you know, if something happens where KJ's knee doesn't work out, you got a guy, then, you know, somebody said on the text about, you know, could they go to a 3-4 so you can get more linebackers on the field? No, but I'll bet you that they will try to find a way to get those three guys out there. So
can KJ play strong?
Yeah.
He's played primarily weak side, but he's a bigger dude.
I think KJ Wright is the most versatile linebacker in the NFL. I mean, because, look, he started his career at middle linebacker. And, you know, he's played middle, he's played weak, he can play on the strong side, he can play anywhere. And I don't think there's that much difference. The other thing you see is that I think on the strong side, and this is where Barkevius Mingo was good, you've got to be really disciplined and have good technique. And because you need to keep the edge, you know, and you need to be able to take on blocks the right way. And that's the one thing, I'll bet you with KJ Wright, it's frustrating to block him because of those arms. You just can't get to his body, his arms and legs. So, yeah, that would definitely fit for him.
There will be a question about Barkevius Mingo. And I was on with Brock and Salk this morning, and they brought it up and said, well, do you think, and Salk was almost kind of advocating the idea, that's a guy that you could let go of. And I thought Barkevius Mingo was really good special teams player for him, and he provides depth, and it's not like this is a position over. They would save $4 million against the cap by letting him go. That would be savings that would come to them. So I think that's something that will remain very much a question. The Seahawks have lost 6 free agents. They've retained 3 and added 1. Overall, I think they've done a really good job of playing defense because of the guys that they lost. Earl, they knew they were going to lose. That was decided back last offseason when they didn't meet his price on an extension. That was set in motion then. They lost Justin Coleman, and while they lost a quality player, that's a position that they've been pretty good at finding and developing players. It's also a position where that's a guy that they found 2 years ago, a week before the regular season started. And instead of paying $9 million to retain him, I completely trust the Seahawks to be able to find cost-effective. Maybe they've already got it. Maybe they've already got Azeem King, who they signed for, what was it, $1.5 million about a week ago. So they're set there. And then Shamar Stephen, and those are the kind of guys that Schneider's got. The only one that surprised me and kind of worries me was Sweezy, because between Sweezy and Fluker, I would have taken Sweezy just because he was more durable last year, and he's really only had 1 year where he was really injured and didn't play at all that season. Otherwise, he's been able to consistently play, whereas Fluker's been somebody that has injuries have become a problem for him.
Remind me, was it the second to last game where Sweezy got hurt?
Yes.
And then he missed Arizona.
He missed the final game.
And then I remember there was news, you know, like, okay, the Cowboy, I was down on the field doing the pregame show or something, and the news came in that he played in that game. So, yeah, he's been very durable.
He did play. He played because they didn't have any more games. There was no rest time. He wasn't 100%. He played because he wasn't going to not play.
Right. And they're playing on Saturdays. So, yeah, he's been relatively healthy. But, you know, it's just funny. You look and afterwards you go, okay, it starts to make sense that, you know, you get a guy that's been a Pro Bowler. He's worked with Solari. And then, you know, that's the other thing. There's not going to be any kind of a learning curve there with Yapati, you know, having known and played for Solari. And that's, I would say that's a little bit underestimated. You know, going from here to Denver, where they had totally different terminology and I had a different coach and he was asking me to do different things. And I struggled with it in the beginning. And sometimes I would kind of fight with him. One of I was respectful about it, but John Paul Young was the coach there and he wanted, you know, us to grab cloth, you know, when you take on a block, and which I was all for if there was cloth to grab. The offensive linemen, you know, they tape their jerseys down. They put that silicone on there. I know it's illegal, but you make it slippery, and there just isn't anything to grab. And so we kind of went back and forth on that. And, you know, there was things that, you know, you have to settle in. And so Yapati's not going to have any of that kind of a problem with Mike Solari. So there's another benefit of having him. And, you know, and then I thought more important was DJ Fluker and the fact that they're signing him. You're going to have two really big, bad dudes playing guard, and they're huge up front, you know, with Britt at center, those two guys, and you got Dwayne Brown and Jermaine Ifedi. That is a huge offensive line. It's as big as anybody in the NFL.
The other piece of news that happened earlier today is Washington kicked off, well, not kicked off, it inbounded its beginning run through the Pac-12 tournament. The number one overall seed in the Pac-12 tourney beat USC 78-75. The Huskies, they have not played their best basketball over the past 2 weeks, but they have survived. They survived today thanks to a turnover late. USC had the ball less than 10 seconds to go, and was it Rakicevic who ended up throwing the ball away and unplugging USC's chance to tie it? Dominic Green came off, and he hit 3 three-pointers off the bench for Washington. Jalen Noel scored 24 points. David Crisp had 18, and that kind of overcame what was a really tough day for Noah Dickerson. He was 1 for 7 from the floor, scored 2 points.
Yeah, you know, Dickerson was working hard down
yes,
there,
he was.
Man. And that's what I love that about him. And he's, you know, usually at a height disadvantage down inside. And I'll tell you what, the fact that he doesn't punch somebody is amazing to me. Because you look at what happens underneath, and it's just like a fight. It's like a brawl down there. And he's always very cool-headed about it. So I admire that about him. And then I thought, you know, it didn't end the game, but at the end, who hit the shot? Was it Nas Jones that hit that?
Dominic Green.
Yeah, Dominic Green hit a shot that we all thought was ill-advised.
It was not. He's specialized. He's not a dribble and shoot guy. Yeah. He is best as a spot-up shooter, and he's got great range. But he was moving to his left, and he shot it, and I was like, oh,
yeah,
man, that's not your shot. And it was pure.
One end.
Absolutely drilled.
But then, you know, mostly was following that up, Matisse Thybulle gets the steal, then the huge windmill dunk. That was so awesome. What a great way to kind of end that one. And so, yeah, they kind of struggled from the line, though. At the free throw line, they were around 50, 60%, but they missed a few down the stretch that would have made it less exciting at the end. But, yeah, Huskies played well. The defense, you know, I end up watching Thybulle the whole time. I just love the way he plays, and he just does everything. Ends up with 5 steals in that game.
And we just have news. Jessamine just said it to me. Ernie Kent has been fired as Washington State's basketball coach.
John Rothstein is reporting that. I want to attribute it to him because he was the first. He is of CBS. He was the first to have it, and he has a source on it. No official statement from Washington State, but I guess Jim Moore's tweet rings true.
Which was that the only way Ernie Kent keeps his job, Jim tweeted this last night, is if Pat Chun, Washington State's athletic director, has DirecTV and not Comcast, being that DirecTV does not carry the Pac-12 network, which is what Washington's game was on this afternoon and what Washington State played on last night.
Well, the last time Jim wrote something about Ernie Kent, it backfired on him, which was sometimes typical of going opposite of what Jim says. No, I'm just kidding. But, yeah, they went on that run down in Arizona where they beat Arizona State in Arizona, and they interview Robert Franks afterwards, and unbelievably, he says, they ask him, what's been the difference? He says, we started listening to Coach. We listened to Ernie Kent. And, you know, so, and they looked really good. They almost beat the Huskies, and then it all just fell off the cliff there, so... It's too bad for Ernie Kent. He's a good guy, did a really good job at Oregon, but just couldn't make it work out there.
Never got any momentum going with their team, and they had a couple weeks where they played pretty well, and that was about it, and they lost yesterday by 30 points and just got drilled yesterday. So that news coming out, we'll see if there's an official announcement about that. Washington helped themselves, because here's the thing, as much as I enjoy watching Gonzaga lose, That result did not help the Huskies in the NCAA tournament, because St. Mary's was a bubble team as well. And for Washington fans like me who are sitting there looking and, do you feel confident about the Huskies getting in if they don't win the Pac-12 tournament in a year where some people think it might just be one Pac-12 team that goes, that you get a little bit nervous. That win over USC is important for Washington. If they had lost that, they would have been very much a bubble team come Selection Sunday. So they advance, and now they're going to take on Colorado, which was up big on Oregon State, and the Beavs came back, and I saw they cut it as close as 11, but take on Colorado in what would be, if Washington makes the tournament this year, that's a huge accomplishment for Coach Hopkins. For Mike Hopkins and that team to make it this year, in a year before, they've got a great recruiting class coming through next year, including Kade Green, who is the transfer from Kentucky that's sitting out this year. They've got a great recruiting class coming in next year. They'll be ranked. They'll be seen as a potential, as a real threat to advance. This was not one of those years because they didn't add significant talent from what they had a year ago. Jalen Noel's a heck of a player, and you've got development from Thybulle, but the fact that they've come together and won the Pac-12 regular season is a surprise.
Yeah, it says a lot about Hopkins. And, you know, they were talking about David Crisp today on the broadcast, and was it McLean? I think it was Don McLean, who I think is a grumpy bugger, but I like listening to him. He's kind of old school, but is he the all-time Pac-12 scoring leader?
He was when he got done at UCLA.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's been replaced since then.
How about, let's ask Big Brain C. Raj.
Don McLean still is, because not many people stay for 4 years anymore.
Yeah, true. Yeah, so anyway, he was on the broadcast, and they were talking about how David Crisp is a pretty good story with UW, but he's kind of been overshadowed by Thybulle, Jalen Noel, and then Hopkins, and what he's been able to do there. He just seems like he's one of those coaches kids love to play for, and, you know, the fact that he's getting these kids, who's the kid out in Washington, D.C., that he pulled out, or it's somewhere back east. It was one of the top.
New York, Isaiah Stewart.
Yeah, Isaiah Stewart. I'm like, wow. I mean, he was going to Duke. He was going to North Carolina. And he's able to recruit and get guys like that out here. It's pretty awesome to see. And so, yeah, we'll see if that. The one thing I worry about with the Huskies, I feel like if they're hot, then it's going to be good. But if they're not, and, you know, Crisp is missing threes and things like that, that they're relying on that. And, you know, as good a defense as they play, it just seems like when they're cold, they go really cold.
There's no doubt about that. The consistency of the scoring today, they get 24 from Noel and 18 from David Crisp to advance in the Pac-12 tournament. NFL free agency, we haven't, with everything that's happened with the Seahawks, we haven't had a chance to really dig into the Antonio Brown saga. And not what the Raiders gave up or anything like that, because I think evaluating what the Steelers got for Brown is difficult because they were in an untenable situation. They couldn't bring Antonio Brown back. But how we see that situation resolving itself. Brown was introduced in Oakland wearing a goofy suit, looked like a military uniform that was there. He was sitting between John Gruden and Mike Mayock. The way that went down, and the thing that I was struck by, is the number of players that applauded Antonio Brown for controlling and dictating the terms of what would happen. And that he got moved out of a situation he no longer wanted to be in Pittsburgh. He got moved to a team that would then give him an additional financial commitment. That he's going to cost the Steelers $20 million this year against their salary cap to not play for them. That's going to be the full weight of what costs. And I don't feel bad for the Steelers because they signed him to it a year ago. And then he got an additional $30 million promised to him that he is going to receive from Oakland. And it's weird that that's getting applauded. It's very strange, but maybe people celebrate teams getting a great draft class and they get huge financial benefits. It was weird to me to see players talk about Antonio Brown changing the game as if that were a good thing.
Yeah, Randy Moss brought that up too, that these players need to take control and do what Antonio Brown did. I don't think there was any kind of formula other than find a team that's willing to put up with your crap. That's what that whole recipe was, because look, the Raiders, and they've always been desperate for receivers for whatever reason. They've always gone way out on a limb for speed and wide receivers. And, you know, never mind that Derek Carr is, the jury's kind of out on him. He had a close to MVP type of year a few years ago. And then last year he was hurt. Right. And then, you know, he's got John Gruden, as you point out quite often, is that he's hard on quarterbacks and he's hard on players. So, yeah, it's a weird situation to me, but I don't think that there's anything there that, you know, a team or a player should follow. There's not like some recipe of what Antonio Brown did. And the thing that's fascinating to me is about, you talk about things falling apart in Pittsburgh, is he is so unbelievably talented. And then he's late. And then he goes out and makes these amazing catches. And all of a sudden, you start making excuses for him, and you start. And next thing you know, you turn around and look, wow, he's never on time. He had, like, his own place during camp. He was treated totally differently. He got mad in a walkthrough and stormed off the field before the last game last year, and then came out on the field, and he wasn't in any kind of Steeler gear. He was in some kind of big fur coat or something. And so they just entirely allowed that to happen, but I'm sure it happened gradually. You know, it's like, hey, look, man, I'm willing to overlook this because you're such a talent. And that's where it was just surprising to me that Mike Tomlin, he seemed like a disciplinarian. He looks like an intimidating type of coach that he allowed that to happen. So then, you know, then Antonio Brown finds somebody that, like I said, will put up with his stuff. And that was the Raiders, and they paid him a ridiculous amount of money. But, yeah, I don't think that's any kind of a blueprint for players to follow in free agency.
Do you think it'll work out for him in Oakland?
No, I don't. I do not think that that's going to be a good deal. You know, here's the thing. How long do you think it's going to take for him to start acting like a diva? You know, after a few times where, and how many times is it going to be late? You think Gruden's going to put up with that? I wouldn't think so. That, you know, being late to meetings, that is, and I've said this many times, I was never late for a meeting in the 9 years I played. I mean, I was one of those things you always make sure you get there 5-10 minutes before. And it's just weird to me that that was allowed by a guy like Mike Tomlin. And then, you know, we'll see what happens with Gruden. But, you know, the other thing is, you know, what if the offensive line doesn't block for him? What if the quarterback gets hurt or, you know, that's not working out? You can run the greatest routes in the world. If you're a receiver, be wide open. But if they can't get you the ball, you're going to get frustrated. And, yeah, this guy's just he's a bad seed. I'm sorry. I would not want him. I would pay to keep him off of my team, too.
Looking at that, and what his history was like, I'm surprised that a team was willing to make, not that a team that would take him because he's incredibly talented, but that a team would be willing to bet money on him continuing to be that productive. Because you have a couple of different possibilities. One is that he's getting older. The second one is that he's obviously demonstrated a willingness to be, if not disruptive, an outright saboteur. Like, he's shown that if he gets it in his mind, he can behave in ways that will hurt your team, that will actively hurt it. That you're betting that neither one of those things happen, because maybe he's totally happy now and his body will start breaking down. He's 31. I'm surprised that a team really took that shot. And maybe that's the perfect franchise to do it because it is Oakland and there's a legacy of that there. But I'm trying to think of other situations I've seen, because I've seen guys that have become headaches and tried to get something by doing that, tried to sulk their way out of town. He's a lesser talented player, but I saw Danny Fortson do that. Like, okay, I'm going to be disruptive because I want you to release me. And the team said, no, we're not going to give you what you want. We're going to make you sit here and suffer through that. But I can't remember seeing that behavior rewarded as aggressively as it was. Terrell Owens is really the only comparison that came to my mind. That San Francisco let him go because they were tired of him, and then they traded him to Baltimore, and then Terrell declared that he wasn't going to Baltimore and that there was a separate deal worked out, and he ends up in Philadelphia, and then they go to the Super Bowl with him. Then he ends up doing sit-ups in his driveway the next year. That's the only thing that I can remember, and Philadelphia sat him down. I mean, they suspended him from the team for a number of weeks. I'll be interested to see how this plays out and if other players do take that tack. Because you could see some guys that we're watching now as Antonio Brown has forced his way out of town and Le'Veon Bell is coming back into the league after sitting out for a year. Le'Veon Bell, it did not pay off for him. His financial decision did not pay off for him.
Yeah, and he'll never get that $14 million back. I would say, though, that most players aren't that way, though. You know, you grow up in the football sort of world, you know, it's all about discipline and it's about being a good teammate and things like that. And so, you know, I think also Mike Tomlin allowed him to be that way. But, yeah, I think that that's a pretty far stretch for most players. I don't think there's that many, you know, Terrell Owens, Antonio Brown type of players. It is interesting, though, because we've seen that happen to players here in Seattle.
Yes.
And brought this up last year. Is like, let's predict who's going to be the troublemaker. Who's going to be, you know, and look, it's not like Richard Sherman or those, you know, Earl Thomas, they were doing anything that was illegal or bad or anything like that, but not being great teammates, and that how, you know, when you get a little bit older, you get more skeptical about the system, and then you get a lot more money, and then you start thinking, why do I have to do it this way? And then all of a sudden, you know, you've got like a problem child on your hands.
It's really interesting. I want to pick up on that because I was asked a question this weekend that I could not answer about the Seahawks. I'll tell you what it is next.
This is Danny Dave and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Danny Dave Moore, 5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer. We got a free agent visit to get you updated on Caron Reed. He's the defensive tackle from the Cowboys. He visited the Seahawks. I'll tell you why to get excited about that in a second. But this weekend I was in California visiting my family, and one of my high school friends who's a big Niners fan, Davey Banford, was talking to me and asking, why do players that leave the Seahawks, why are they so angry about what happened in Seattle? And he's primarily talking about Sherman, but there was some about Earl Thomas too. And it's a guy, he's familiar with the Seahawks. And what he said to me is they won a ton. They won a Super Bowl, got back to another one, yet they're so angry. He was saying Bennett and Sherman. And I started to talk to him and answer it. And I was like, well, I think some of it, because my working theory has been that Pete empowers his players by coaching them to the best vision of what they can be. He relies on encouraging their strong sense of self and all of these things that really help them achieve and be their best. But when some things go wrong, or maybe a situation, maybe that player goes past his prime and isn't playing as well anymore, that it allows that person to sort of color outside the lines, that that strong sense of self, if that person's rebellious, well, they might be more willing to rebel against the team structure because you've built up their sense of self so much. And he completely didn't buy it. He's like, man, but they've won. They've won a ton. They've done really good. It's clear he's a really good coach, and it's not because he encourages them that they're... And his belief was that you had a unique group of players who... that you're not going to have another Richard Sherman, and you're not going to have another Earl Thomas. And as talented as those guys were, that there was something about their personality that made them more rebellious and has led to, once they left, being more angry at the Seahawks and at Pete Carroll than the facts warrant.
So they were all on defense too, right?
Correct.
So you've got Bennett, Earl, and Sherm.
Yes.
But Cam Chancellor held out, but Cam's around the team now. Everybody loves him. He's a great leader.
Marshawn would be in that.
Marshawn, sorry.
Now, Marshawn doesn't say anything, and Marshawn doesn't act on it. Like, you don't hear it from him. But he was a defiant player, especially toward the structure of the team.
Yeah, so, but look at some of the other players during that same period of time. You know, and it could just be coincidence, not necessarily just something that Pete Carroll. Now, Pete Carroll does allow for, you know, for people to express themselves, and there's no shutting anybody down, seemingly anyway, from the outside. So, but, you know, what about Bobby Wagner? How do you explain him and K.J. Wright and Justin Britt and, you know, a lot of the other players? I mean, there's, you know, look, Doug's, you know, he complains and, you know, things like that. And sometimes he does things that it makes him look like he's angry. But, you know, look, Doug's been a good teammate, right?
He's great, dude.
I love that when Sherm was complaining about the pass, he catches a pass on the 1 yard line. This was in the Rams game a couple years ago, and sprints over and hands the ball to Darrell Bevell. That was awesome. Yeah. So, you know, that, I don't know that there's any kind of, you just, you know, there's three different players there that are, you know, acted up in different ways, you know, and I guess I look at probably Sherman is the most.
Yes.
He's number one on the list. Probably Earl then after that. Although, you know, Bennett, the one thing, what's the worst thing Michael Bennett did or said? To me, it was that he said he was reading books during Pete's meetings.
Yeah.
Is there anything?
I also didn't like Gap Integrity Chicken.
Yeah.
I thought Gap Integrity, like him just racing upfield at any point he wanted to because he wanted to get sacks. He didn't care about actually playing the run.
The rest of the team.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that doesn't sit well with your teammates when guys are being selfish. And I can tell you this, as a linebacker, I hated that. I hated playing behind guys like that, man. You know, it was just, you're not doing your job. You're not doing your job. You know, allow me to do my job by doing your job.
Would you ever try to help them do their job?
Help me?
Yeah.
No.
By taking them by the shoulder pads and pushing them into the person they were supposed to hit?
I have done that before. My brother, my poor brother at Stanford, I'd be behind him, and there was a few times where I would, you know, shove him or the other D tackle into a blocker so I could make a tackle.
He never complained, though. Maybe it's because he's my brother, but yeah, Big Mike. But anyway, another thing, just really quick story. My brother got his clock cleaned on the sidelines one time, and just this tight end hit him so hard, and he went flying. He was like 280 pounds, and he almost like went all the way out to the track. He got hit so hard, and I went up to the tight end. I'm like, I'm going to get you for that. I'm going to get you. And he's looking at me like, what the heck are you doing? Like, that was my brother.
Anyway. You mess with one lineman, yeah, you mess them all.
That's right. I don't know how we got down this wormhole here, but
I was talking about crazy players. Yeah. That a little bit of crazy under Pete Carroll can become a lot of crazy, or maybe it was just a unique case of crazy.
Yeah, it could be. And you know, I don't know that whatever Pete does, I mean, it's not going to change people's personality.
No.
The way he coaches, you know, you're either that way or you are not. And, you know, Bobby Wagner, KJ, all the guys I mentioned, you know, they're all, you know, mild-mannered guys that don't feel the need to act up or speak up. And that's pretty impressive considering all of the different ways there is to express yourself, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever. So how about that? I knew the names of all those things.
You nailed every single one of them.
There's texting. There's emails. I'm aware of that.
Next thing, you're going to be doing emojis, sending thumbs up to me.
We'll not do the emojis. But, yeah, it's
how about the little green guy that goes,
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, you have. Somebody felt good to flex a little.
No, I remember that now. Anyway, inside joke there. But, yeah, it's not like Pete's just going to magically transform these guys into bad kids or anything. You know, maybe he allows a little bit more. But, yeah, but I'm with Davey Bamford. What are you so mad about?
Why are you so angry?
Why? You've made a lot of money. Maybe it's because they were so good. I mean, what they did was historic. That's the scoring defense 4 years in a row in the teens, you know, like 14, 15, 16 points a game. That's remarkable. So maybe that had something to do with it. But, yeah, I could just I'm with Bamford on that one. I don't get what – you're making lots of money. You know, and then remember all the things would come out, like Richard Sherman would make these announcements like, well, they don't care about you unless you can play football anymore. You know, the second I can't play football anymore, you know, they're not going to be paying me this much money. Well, no kidding. I mean, that's the way it works everywhere. If you're an accountant and you can't add anymore or subtract, you might lose your job. They might not want to pay you. Like if either of us lost the ability to speak, although you could argue that that happens on a daily basis here. You know, you're not going to be in the radio business anymore. So they just like making things up.
They don't care about me as a person. Yeah. No, they care about you as an employee. That's
right.
What your employer does.
Yeah. So, I mean, all these ridiculous things came out, and I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, what went wrong? Remember that one time we were interviewing Michael Bennett, and he said something about R. Kelly or somebody, he made some joke, and we're all sitting there laughing, and, you know, he's like hitting you in the ribs, like, huh? Isn't that, you know, you're having a great time. 2 years later, I'm standing next to him watching him scream at Jim Moore. You know, like, why? What happened? Because he wrote about you in the Kitsap Daily Sun?
That happened.
Oh, my God.
That actually happened.
It was amazing to me how that unwound.
Well, it's Danny Dave Moore, 5 o'clock refresh, brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. Brock and Salk asked me this morning, what free agent do you want the Seahawks to sign? And I had an answer. I had a position. I just didn't have the name. Now we've got the name. It's Caron Reed. We'll tell you who he is next.
You're listening to Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
The idea of players being able to express themselves and the dangers of that. But Caron Reed is here. And the reason that's significant is, and I'll admit this, I had to go Google to see who he was. He's a defensive lineman from the Dallas Cowboys. And when Brock and Salk asked me this morning, what free agent do you want them to sign? What I said was, I'm excited to see the defensive lineman that they pick up. Because John Schneider, among his many different talents, his ability to find moderately priced defensive linemen who come here and start for really good defenses is exceptional. I'll give you guys Ataba Rubin. When they brought in Tony McDaniel, Alan Branch was another guy who was a pretty high profile. He'd been a second round pick who didn't really pan out, was not considered all that great of a player in Arizona and came up here. John Schneider's ability to find that moderately priced, really good starter as a defensive tackle is one of the biggest traits. And one of the reasons when Shamar Stephan left to go back to Minnesota. 3-year, $12.5 million contract. I was like, congratulations. That shows how smart John is. Because John got him out of a 1-year deal that was significantly less expensive. And he played well enough in his 1 year here that Minnesota paid to bring him back. And I was one of the people that wondered what the hell they were doing when they let Tom Johnson go. And he ended up leaving and going back to Minnesota. And now you look at it, they kept Shamar Stephen and Puna Ford ahead of Tom Johnson. It was absolutely the right call because you've still got Puna Ford for 3 years. And Shamar Stephen was a valuable enough player that Minnesota gave him multi-years.
Pretty amazing, too, signing Puna Ford. You know, I'm glad you mentioned his name because I hadn't thought about him in a while because we're just talking about free agency and the upcoming draft and everything. But, man, that guy was Big 12 Player of the Year and didn't get drafted. And I think that was one of their first calls. But incredibly long arms, and he doesn't have a lot to say, but that's okay. He says it on the field. And I think they now have some good run stuffers. We'll see if this Caron Reed guy, the guy, the Prince of Pierogi, is that his
Jamie Meter.
Jamie Meter from
Pierogi Prince of a town that starts
Parma.
With the letter
Parma.
Parma.
There we go.
The Pierogi Prince of Parma.
But if you go watch that guy play, he is a great run player. I mean, you want to talk about run gap integrity. That's this guy. There is no run gap integrity chicken with Jamie Meter. So anyway, that comes home to roost. So yeah, they're getting some good players. You're right about that, though. And it's kind of like in the late rounds, you know? Fourth, fifth round, third round. It just John has an ability to find guys that fit. And I think also Pete has a pretty good way of expressing exactly what he wants for his defense, you know. And this is Pete's defense. So this is good news. I get some run stuffers in there. And then, you know, you think about I'm not like worried, but I'm concerned, I guess, about Nas Jones and his development. I really hope it continues to come along. He has got a ton of talent.
He had a year that was a disappointment. He just didn't play much. And there were games that he was a healthy scratch, and it was puzzling because even when he did play, there were a couple times he had really big plays. That is something to watch because he is a guy with a ton of potential and a ton of talent, and you just haven't seen it yet. But Caron Reed is from the Cowboys. He's played on a number of teams each of the past 3 years. Detroit is the team that he's been the longest with. He's out of Princeton.
Apparently he's pretty smart.
Yeah, so came, played at Princeton and has been there. And I'll just say that whenever I assume that the defensive linemen that they pick up I will have never heard of before will be general journeymen who come here and play for about the league minimum, maybe a tick more, and absolutely fit in perfectly with what this team does. A couple other pieces of news today. Washington advanced through the quarterfinals. They beat USC today in a game that was very, very close and down to the wire. 78-75, the big series of plays, sequence of plays. Dom Green hit a three-pointer, and that was followed immediately by a steal and windmill dunk by Matisse Thybulle, and that pushed Washington's lead, which had been cut to one, up and pushed it back to six, and they held on to win. And the other thing is the Mariners have announced their travel squad, the players that went to Japan, and included in that group is Braden Bishop, who is former Huskies player, someone who has not played above AA and had an incredible spring training with the team. And he's put himself in position where he is going to be a consideration to play as they open the season there in Japan.
Yeah, Braden Bishop, they interviewed him. He's a Husky, right?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, so they interviewed him yesterday on the game. I was watching because I clicked away from the Stanford-UCLA game. It was such a blowout. Oh, my God, it was terrible. So anyway, they interviewed him in the dugout. He couldn't stop smiling the whole time, but really cool for him. And he hasn't been above AA, so it's, you know, maybe a little bit of a stretch. But this is kind of what we're looking for, you know, some of these young guys to come in and make a splash and get an opportunity. So really cool for him to, you know, not only make the big league roster, but also get a chance to go to and play in Japan. I mean, that's going to be one of those special things he'll look back on the rest of his life.
I woke up to great news this morning. I don't know how it was for you. When I woke up and found out that KJ Wright had re-signed.
Yeah.
I was so excited because often the endings aren't great. And that's just the reality of today's pro sports. And I'm not going to say it's good or bad, but it very seldom ends seamlessly with a guy walking out with the team that embraced him and loved him where he played his best football. And I didn't assume that was going to happen with KJ Wright, but I knew it was a possibility. With him being a free agent, with the injuries that he had, the situation with his knee that has been something they've addressed for each of the past 2 years and was a significant problem last year, limiting him to just a handful of games. I didn't know what would happen. I was really pumped to find out that he came back. And well, some people would look at it and say $7.5 million is a lot. I would say that there's no team that knows KJ's ability and his injury better than the Seahawks do. And I'm really happy that they were able to find a middle ground. And it wasn't somebody that lured him out with a $10 million or $12 million. I'm glad that they were able to find a way, because he's going to feel good about that contract and about a two-year $15 million deal. And I'm glad, because that very rarely happens, that a guy is able to go out or to finish his career potentially with the team where he played his best football.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. That it also sends a message that, and I was happy too. I've actually been worried about KJ. Just I can't imagine him in another uniform. But you know, that's the most money they've spent, right? Upati was a couple million. You know, I guess the kicker was maybe a little bit more than that, but it's for more years. But, you know, they're not going out and chasing after Antonio Browns. They're using that money to re-sign the guys that have played well for them. And that's where I think that sends a good message. And, again, it's a happy byproduct of that they have good players that they've drafted and been able to keep here and are able to pay them. But it also just kind of sends a little bit of a message that they're not going to go out and get crazy in free agency and spend all the money that, you know, would otherwise go to a guy like KJ Wright. So really cool. I'm curious if there was ever any teams that were maybe a little bit more than that and that he, you know, wanted to come back here. And because that would be worth, I don't want to put it in dollar terms, like if it was a 2 year deal for you, you know, and it's either $13 million or $15 million, would you uproot your life to go to another city for the extra $2 million? It would probably be the financially a very sound plan. But, you know, there's also the learning curve, being on a new team. You don't know if you're going to like it there. I mean, there's all kinds of factors. So I'm just curious if that is going to come into play. And that's the classic hometown discount, you know, which is, you know, always brought up. But, you know, you're talking about a couple million dollars in some of these cases. And it's interesting that, you know, a guy like KJ Wright very well could have passed up, you know, a little bit more money just to stay here.
Danny Davenport, we got the professor John Clayton going to come in, update us on the latest free agent happenings. That includes Golden Tate in New York next.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
It's time to find out what we've learned, brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Jess!
What's up, Danny? You
What's
kind of had
on?
The LeBron resin
I did.
Cloud
I gave
going
it the,
on.
I gave it the clap.
I liked it.
Thought we were going to go with the Matisse Thybulle windmill.
That was awesome. Did you see his quote afterward? I was sending a message.
Yeah, that's a
period.
Good one.
Ooh.
Although, it is a take. My favorite, one of my favorite quotes ever, it was when Jordan was at UNC, and I think it was in the ACC tournament against Maryland, and he had a big dunk at the end, and somebody's like, were you sending any messages? And he looks up and goes, no messages. So defiant. Michael Jordan's so cool.
I love that they want to send a message. Matisse Thybulle's a super nice guy, you know, and just we've interviewed him, and he's super intelligent and, you know, just everything that you would want your son to be, but he's got some nasty in him.
That's what's going to make him stick in the NBA.
Yeah.
That guy's going to play in the NBA for 10 years because he's long, he likes to play defense, and he's willing to be a little bit feisty.
I might actually watch an NBA game that he plays in.
Ooh, the playoffs are going to start. They're going to be good this year, Dave.
Are they going to play any defense?
Yeah, once the playoffs start.
Yeah.
Usually around this time of year, yeah. Well, we learned some things today, starting off with Wyman not caring about fashion all that much.
There was a picture today of what? He was in a velvet jacket or something like that?
Looked to be brown velvet, which I thought might be his alter ego. Like, it might be his secret agent code name,
mm-hmm.
Brown Velvet.
But, you know, like, he's just, he's not doing anything. He's fine, okay? He's
fine. He's a
little
weird.
I don't care. He's a great quarterback, and he's a good man,
Sierra
and he's got a family.
Sierra was wearing, like, leopard print dress and matching jacket.
That's fine. That doesn't affect anybody. That's all right. He's still going to go out and ball out.
His jacket was made of brown velvet.
What about some of the stuff you wear, Danny?
What's with those sky blue pants you have on? Does that even match that purple tie?
When that happens, I felt like, dance, puppets. I got Dave to do exactly what I wanted. I wanted Dave to rip on me.
Oh, sure. You're such a mind controller, Danny. You're like L. Ron Hubbard.
Oh! No, what are you bringing up Scientology for?
Brainwashing.
To get your brain and wash it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that need to take out their brains and wash it.
I think Dave's addicted to Scientology documentaries because he keeps watching the same one over and over again.
I can't.
Is it going clear?
The one guy who's interviewed it's called Going Clear. Yeah. And at the end, he's like, hey, I like all the positive stuff and everything, but there's the part about the frozen bodies being dropped into volcanoes while simultaneously blowing up a neutron bomb or something
that
like
that.
That
was how the apocalypse happens.
Yeah. And he's like, what the bleep is this? He's just screaming out like, I'm in for all the positive stuff, but what? Yeah, so it's fascinating.
I don't think I could have gotten past L. Ron Hubbard's teeth. Like when they're seeing the actual footage from him, his teeth freaked me out.
Yeah, he's got weird like lips and
yeah,
the way he talks.
Yeah.
Standing there in that Navy uniform.
Oh, strange.
Yeah, that documentary makes me cringe quite a bit. However, I've watched it more than once too. We also learned an alternate reason that Danny was so excited about the KJ Wright signing.
The other reason that I was excited about KJ Wright, not only is he a great dude and all that, and he's played the last 8 years here and he's dominant, awesome linebacker, it was a good opportunity for puns. All is right with the world.
Oh, yeah.
Blessed are the righteous, for they shall decimate opposing running backs. This one was for the right-leaning members of the crowd.
Wyman goes full Tom Sula when you get punny.
I don't know. I didn't realize I did that in the beginning because I was wondering why Jess even said that.
Yeah.
Now listening back, it got what it deserved.
You didn't respond at first. You got a second and a half pause and then... KJ Wright coming on at 7:30 tonight, Seattle Sports Tonight.
Yeah, he's
going to join
Seattle Sports Tonight, which is awesome. Awesome. Jake Heaps, Stacey Ross, Curtis Rogers.
I'm familiar with his work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is, and for anybody that's not getting the Jim Tom Sula reference, here it is.
You and me talking. Just give me a name that you think would be good as an offensive coordinator. What if I throw a name out there?
Yeah,
Mark Trussman. It's someone you might know, right? That's maybe the best you can give me.
Yeah.
Same question, defensive coordinator. What do you give me an idea of what you're looking for? I'm not trying to trip you up.
I'm really not going to talk about. I'm just not going to do
the style?
It out of respect to those people.
If you're the owner of the 49ers, how did you not go fire him right then? That's his first day on the job.
We're
where
just kidding.
Like, we have made a colossal error.
Just
before
kidding.
Before it gets worse.
That was like their flagship station too. I think the guy wasn't trying to. Even said it.
Literacy isn't really high on the list when it comes to coaching.
As a head coach, you can't just...
Yeah, that's his media voice. That's how he talks to people in the media.
Finally, today we learned that Wyman doesn't understand why players who leave here are so mad.
I'm with Bamford on that one. I don't get what... You're making lots of money. You know, and then remember all the things would come out, like Richard Sherman would make these announcements like, well, they don't care about you unless you can play football anymore. You know, the second I can't play football anymore, you know, they're not going to be paying me this much money. Well, no kidding. I mean, that's the way it works everywhere. If you're an accountant and you can't add anymore or subtract, you might lose your job. They might not want to pay you. Like if either of us lost the ability to speak, although you could argue that that happens on a daily basis here. You know, you're not going to be in the radio business anymore. So they just like making things up.
They don't care about me as a person. Yeah. No, they care about you as an employee. That's
right.
What your employer does.
Yeah, I don't know what Sherm was trying to do there, what he was getting at. I guess he was just trying to expose the ugly side of business, which, you know, welcome to the real world.
But there's a part of it is like, that's interesting that you think your employer should care about everything about your feelings.
Yeah.
That's not the experience of most workers in America.
Right. Well, and the other thing, too, is this is probably the one place where they do care. I mean, like Pete Carroll and John Schneider loves the players. They love the players. And so, that's not really going on here. It's a lot colder other places. So, yeah, I don't know where that whole thing went wrong. It was weird.
It is Danny David Moore. We hope Jim's back tomorrow. Seriously, we hope he feels better. It's been a bummer. Plus, Ernie Kent apparently parting ways. Washington State parting ways is how it was reported. And then Bob Condotta asked.
A change of leadership is the official statement from Wazoo.
Okay. It has come out officially because I saw.
Yes, they have confirmed.
The guy who initially reported said they're parting ways. And Bob Condotta responded, does this mean he's also fired?
Yeah, no kidding. Thank you, Bob. And like, was that a euphemism for, how about this? He got canned. Yeah, just use that, or we're parting
Welcome
ways.
Welcome to Firedville, population U. It's Danny David Moore. We do want to thank James Beck of O'Day High School for joining us, part of the Irish football staff there. The Professor John Clayton, as always. Jess is our producer, Curtis Rogers on the board. For the two of us, thanks for listening. Seattle Sports at Night coming up next.